Hi everyone, welcome to the Equip and Elevate podcast. This is a place where we want to help women to cultivate the courage to own their purpose, own their journeys, and own their success. I'm your host, Ayanda Vanna, and each episode, I'll be bringing you conversations with some dynamic and bold women. My goal is that through inspired conversations, you'll gain a new perspective and tools to thrive in your personal journeys, businesses, and careers. And most importantly, to live a life of purpose and passion. Thank you so much for pushing play today. And now let's begin. This episode is brought to you by Salal. We've partnered with Salal for the next three episodes to bring you conversations that cover themes around mental health as part of Mental Health Awareness Month. Salal's vision is for every Salal user to experience true wellness because good health is the ultimate wealth. What excites us about this partnership is creating a safe and important space to talk about mental health and wellness. We hope that for the next three episodes, you'll learn from our guests on how they navigated their mental health and well-being in their respective journeys. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Equip and Elevate. So today we're going to be talking about starting mental health conversation with yourself. I'm really excited. I have a clinical psychologist in the house and she's really going to be taking you through some of the ways that you can start this conversation with yourself. And I think more than anything, we are a mental health month and we want to use this space and this platform to really create that platform for you at home or when you're listening and thinking, I'm not really sure if I'm struggling with trauma. I'm not really sure if I'm feeling a type of way, but I cannot locate this. But this is no way replacement of therapy or counseling. So still do seek help if you are in that kind of position. This is more a conversation starter to plant a seed or to give you a space where you can actually locate how you're feeling and then take the next step to meet up with a psychologist or a therapist or someone that can take you through that entire process. Today we are live at the Radisson Blue Hotel. We will be showing some really cool features of how it looks. It's really stunning. We've loved being here. And also this episode is brought to you by Salal. But to get started, I have Luanela here. She's a clinical psychologist and also a speaker. And more than anything, I'm excited about her journey in mental health and really excited to hear her share some of those tips that she might have for you. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. So great to be here.
We're excited to talk about this because I think for a lot of us, it's when I was putting together these questions or with the team, and I think you look at how you're like, shucks, is this career trauma? I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, when you look at your journey in corporate or you look at your journey in life. So I think a lot of people, wherever they are, they might be sitting there thinking, how do I start this conversation with myself? And I think when we go into the state of mental health in South Africa, people are starting to talk about it, but I feel like there is still a little bit of taboo when it's attached to it. And I think it's very important for us to create spaces where we can, which you already do with your social media outside the work that you're already doing, that people are having these conversations.
Yeah.
But before we get started with that, I want to go back to your childhood. I want people to get to know you a little bit more before we get started with the real work today. Maybe tell us about the key values that have shaped you from your upbringing or just who you are and how your journey has been.
Yeah. So this is actually really awkward for me because I'm generally the person on the other side asking people about their childhoods and their journeys. But sure, I am from the Eastern Cape in a very small town called Lusikisiki.
Oh.
Yeah, and most people generally don't know why we don't know it. But I think I had a really pretty, I guess, normal childhood. The early years of my life, you know, I'm the last born of very many children. I don't even know how many at this point. Okay, I know it's about 5 or 6. So I'm the last born. I grew up very, like, spoiled by my siblings, but also just by my parents. You know, I went to school. It was just a normal kind of childhood. I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. Both of my parents were in business. So I think that's a big part of who I am. Mm-hmm. So I've started my own business. And I always ask myself, where do I, like, find all of these things?
Yeah.
But I really think some of it comes from, you know, the values and the things that my parents taught me. Mm-hmm. And I remember, actually, I was really young. And my parents, I asked my mom, because we had like a shop, one of the shops, and I asked her, how do you know how to price things? Yeah. right? And I was young at that age. I don't even remember how old I was. And she was saying to me, oh, no, you... She used an example of a packet of sweets. She's like, if you buy a packet of sweets and there's 100 inside and you buy it for 7 rands, most people think you've got a profit of 3 rands. And she was like, but that's not the profit you have. Your profit is actually only 1 rand.
Sure.
The rest of the 2 rands, you put the 1 rand aside, you let it accumulate to another 7 rands. And then the other one you invest into buying something else like biscuits or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she was like, but if you're deciding to sell at school, you're not going to be able to sell 2 packets of sweets in one day. Mm-hmm. So then you have to kind of find a friend to do it for you. Yes, you lose a little bit of your profit, but actually you're not using that much time to do that. So like, I think to myself, I'm like, wow,
that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't have the vocabulary for scaling, for mm-hmm. investment, for all of that. Mm-hmm. But she kind of just learned, was teaching me even from a really young age mm. how to do things and how to think about business and how to price and, mm. and all of that stuff. So I'm very entrepreneurial myself. I'm always thinking of different ideas. Mm. I don't want to do all of the businesses myself, so which is why I also like consulting work and all of that mm. stuff. But yeah, so that's a little bit of me. And then... into my childhood, I think I was 11. It was 11. I lost both of my parents.
Sure, sorry.
So I think part of that taught me a lot of being intentional. Sure. I am one of those people who I just can't do superficial conversations.
Yeah.
I struggle.
Sure.
When I'm in a setup where it's a social setup, I'm one of those people that just gravitates towards the circle that's talking rather than the people dancing. I mean, I don't know how to dance. I don't know how to dance, but I will generally gravitate towards people having conversations, meaning. So I'm a very intentional person. When I relate with people, I want to relate in a very intentional way.
Sure.
So, so that's a little bit about just some of the things that have kind of like built me. I think Christianity is a really big part of who I am, mm-hmm. but I picked that up in later on in life. It wasn't necessarily from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that even is part of just being intentional. What do you want out of your life? What meaning mm-hmm. do you ascribe to your life? So I'm a very serious person.
Me too.
I am a very serious person. I'm lighthearted. I'll have conversations and I'll make jokes and all of that stuff, but I really struggle with just superficial relationships.
Sure.
You know, my friends used to say in varsity, like, you're just trying to marry your boyfriends. But it's just that I just couldn't do the whole vibing and flinging
yes.
and all of that kind of stuff. So I've always been a person who just, I'm straightforward, I'm focused, I have very incredible work ethic, I'm very disciplined, and I love being consistent.
Mm.
And it's just the journey of my life has kind of taught me that if you don't put in the work, then you don't get the output. So I work very hard.
Mm, I love that. I love what you're saying about being intentional and not being in spaces or having superficial conversations. And I think when I look back to my upbringing or what I used to say, I'm also a very serious person. I always like, I'm a very serious person. I may be boring to you sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think it's also that comes with the whole being intentional about what I want. And also with the boyfriends thing, I mean, I used to say, what are your intentions with me? If you like this,
exactly.
I'm like, I'm out. It's fine.
Exactly.
I'm like, I can't do this. I can't vibe. I can't, you know, decide on where we're going. I just need to know what you want with me so that I know if I want to invest some time in this. But growing up, what did you want to do? Did you always know you wanted to go into psychology?
Yeah.
What was your journey into that?
I think when I was very young, I always said doctor because, I mean, that's what you're used to.
Yeah.
You're a doctor, lawyer, teacher. That's the kind of careers that you want to. But after I lost my parents, I remember a year later, I was asking my siblings, was I on holiday? And they were like so confused at this question. Mm. I'm like, it feels like I've come back, but I don't know where I was. And only when I was training to be a psychologist, I realized that I probably was going through a depressive episode at the time.
Wow.
I just didn't know it.
Okay.
But I remember one of the very important things that at the moment I kept thinking, I was like, I'm feeling something, but I don't know what it is.
Mm.
And nobody's helping me understand what I'm feeling.
Mm.
So I've always kind of searched, even from that age, I was searching for something that kind of helps people make meaning out of what they're feeling. So I came across, I mean, like I said, I grew up in Lusikisiki. We didn't really have that much exposure into careers and all of that. So I came across counseling, you know, but counseling in that sense used to be about HIV counseling, you know, when you have, you know, chronic illness and all of that. So I was like, this is actually quite interesting. And I started exploring that. And one holiday, I was visiting my cousins, and she used to go to a school in Margate, which is a little bit, you know, it's a well-established town. And and we were in the same grade, and she was asking me, what do you want to do? I was like, counseling. I want to be a counselor. Right now, I've got, like, the terminology for this. And she's like, why not a psychologist? I was like, hey, what? What is that? Yeah. And she kind of just like, oh, no, psychologists do this. This is the extent to which they go compared to a counselor. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I have locked it in. And I was like, I want to be a psychologist. Sure. At this point, I was like 12, and I was in grade 9. So we were about to choose our subjects. So I went to school quite early. Mm. So and I went in, I was like, whatever subjects I do, as long as it gets me to being a psychologist. So ever since then, I've never kind of lost sight of that. Sure. When I was, you know, about to apply to go to varsity, everyone kind of knew. It wasn't a new conversation. So I've had it for a very long time. Just the understanding. And that's why mental health is so important to me. Sure. Because my compassion for it comes, I think it was rooted firstly in me, in saying, I want to help people understand the things about themselves that they don't understand. Sure. Right? Yes. I want them to identify some of those feelings and that vocabulary that is missing. Because, sure. I mean, I think when you grow up in a Black family, sometimes you just like, they're like, oh, no, go to school. Mm. You know, things are going to be fine. Time will heal or whatever. But nobody's saying, oh, you're feeling angry. Mm. You're feeling sad. You're feeling disappointed. This is what grief looks like. Mm. So I've always wanted to fill that gap for people. And that's still what I still want to do, even to this day.
Sure. I love that. I think even just listening to you speaking, I don't know. You just have such a calmness. I feel like I'm in your session. I feel like you're counseling right now. Really? And I genuinely mean that. I think maybe you can tell us about how your journey was for anyone that wants to be a clinical psychologist. You went to varsity, mm-hmm. did practicals. What's the journey? Maybe someone's sitting there and thinking, I'm in grade 10 and I've never, you know, really, I don't understand the journey. Yeah. I've heard about medicine, you do practicals, internship, and all these different things. Yeah. What was your journey into where you are right now with your own, I'll say, wellness hub, and getting to establishing one?
Yeah, so after high school, then I went into varsity and I did my first year. And I did 2 years of, you know, general psychology. So the road to being a psychologist is actually quite long. Mm. It's longer than, you know, I realized. I think had I known before, I probably would have ducked and done something else. But I'm grateful that I didn't. So I did 2 years of general psychology, and then I realized the extent to what I was trying to do, that this is an emotional process. Mm-hmm. This is about dealing with people's traumas. So, I mean, until that point, I had never been to a psychologist myself. I had never been to therapy. I had never gotten any kind of intervention. And I was, you know, studying about psychology and all of that. So a lot of my past was also just unraveling at the time. So I was like, I'm not doing this. Mm. So I decided to do industrial psychology. So I jumped ship.
Sure.
And industrial psychology is about, you know, organizations, you know, change management. So it's very impersonal. So yes, it's still about people and mental health, but it's really about within an organization. Mm. It's not, let's talk about, you know, your deep feelings, your pathology, all of that kind of stuff. So I did that. I did my honors in it. I went to go work in industrial psychology. Sure. I did 1 year and I was like, maybe it's just the organization. I'm just not happy. This is not what I want to do with my life. And then I changed organizations and I went to another one and I was like, well, this is not an organization thing. This is just a passion and purpose thing. So I decided I'm going to go back to school.
Wow.
So I went back to school and I did clinical psychology. And from that point, so you do your honors in clinical psychology, you do your master's in clinical psychology, and your master's, depending on your institution, is either 1 or 2 years. And, you know, after you've done your coursework and your research, you then go into your internship. And then after internship, you do your community service. And then after community service, only then do you register as an independent psychologist. So it's such a long journey. Sure. But I was just so happy that I finally found it. And yes, it's intimidating. And yes, it's a lot of work. Mm. And yes, it's very it's painful kind of experiences, you know, dealing with people's traumas and all of that. But it's also very fulfilling work. I find it as a gift being a therapist because I am so exposed to so many different people, you know, their lives, their journeys. You see someone's life change right in front of you. And it's such a beautiful gift. But after community service, I then didn't have work, right? And I am not the kind of person who sits and says I'm unemployed. So I was like, I've always wanted to have a business. I didn't want to do it now. I wanted to learn, you know, I wanted to work for a couple of years. But I was like, well, I guess no time like the present. So I started my business, which is Oasis Mental Wellness Hub. And even then, right, the idea of calling it a hub, I've always known that I want to do more than just therapy. I wanted to encompass quite a lot of stuff. So this first leg of it was Oasis Therapy, which is therapy, one-on-one therapy, group therapy, and all of that. And what I've done in the past year is that I've also just created another system of how do we intervene in different ways? Because I've realized that not everyone wants to be in therapy. And not everyone feels comfortable starting in therapy. So Luminate Mind is a digital platform that does self-help tools. So it's like mental health training, you know, on video, pre-recorded videos. You've got your worksheets. It's like doing an entire training course on yourself. And you've got quite a lot of tasks and worksheets that you work through that help you do that self-help kind of work. And I do other things like, you know, medical, legal and all of that. So it literally is a hub of mental health stuff. And that's what I want to do. I want to make sure that mental health is absolutely accessible to people. Yes, it is an expensive kind of intervention, but things like the training hub, that's actually way more affordable. Like a training course costs you like half of one session and you actually do it over a long period of time. So it's things that I really just want to establish so that people can have no excuse to take care of themselves, right?
I love that. And what would you say, going back to saying you want to make, you know, creating spaces where mental health is accessible, and when we move into the topic about starting the conversation about mental health with yourself, when we look at the state of mental health in South Africa, maybe we can just discuss that. I mean, it is, as I said, still kind of like a taboo topic, but I'm seeing a lot of the younger generation or younger people, they're more vocal about their mental health. But when we go back deep and saying, what is the state of mental health in South Africa and why is it important for us to actually prioritize it as a as an entirety and also in the country?
So it's actually quite terrible. There's a report that came out at the beginning of the year around March, February. And South Africa was one of the top suicidal countries of the 34 countries that were actually surveyed. And that's heartbreaking because we go through so much as South Africans. There's just so much in our economy, our lives, just our well-being. But the thing that we really lack is just a little bit of compassion. You know, when a person says, oh, I'm not feeling well, someone is just like, oh, they need to snap out of it. So there's just the stigma that's surrounding mental health that is, you know, stopping people from reaching out for help. But also it's this thing that I need to be strong. You know, my family was strong. You know, we grew up from strong families. So it's the state of South Africa and mental health is bad. There's a lot of suicidality. There's a lot of disorders. And there's a lot of people that don't even get diagnosed to be added into those stats. And even the people sometimes that reach out for help, and I see this in practice as well, they're not engaging. Some people don't engage in the process because it's a difficult process. You know, someone comes in and they think they're going to be fine after one session. And I always say this in the first session, like, this is going to be a process. Sometimes you're going to want to see my face and sometimes you don't. But the reality is until you go through the journey and the process, you're not going to feel better. And that's just the reality of it. And I know it for myself that for the longest time, I realized, oof, this is what my baggage looks like. And I didn't want to go in there. And then I was like, actually, unless I go in there and explore things for myself, I'm not going to feel the way that I want to. And I did. And yes, the can of worms were there. And yes, I explored them. But now when I look at my childhood and my past experiences, I don't have anxiety about it. I don't have the sense of dread. But it is in the process of doing it that you actually get help.
And why is it important for one to be aware of the mental health or mental wellness? Just being aware of that. I think maybe sometimes, as you said, people are like, oh no, snap out of it. We're not being intentional about being aware of it. Why is it important?
Because it affects most of your life. Mm. You know, the way that you feel about your world, your perspective, your life, even yourself, affects the way that you're working, how you pitch at work. You know, something happens at work, you're like, well, I've always known that this is going to happen to me. You know, the way that you are with your friends, the way that you are in relationships, you know, a person genuinely wants to love you and you just don't have the capacity to be loved, never mind to love. Sure. But you can't receive it. It's like, what does this person want from me? Mm. You know, what's their ulterior motive? So unless you have a healthy state of mind, you actually struggle to integrate in the different areas of your life. It's like when you're not feeling well, you can go on a holiday and you're still not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But when you're in a good space, you go like next door. Yeah. You do a staycation and you feel amazing. Mm. Because there's something about the way that you're feeling, the way about your mindset, just how you relate to your world that actually helps you enjoy your world. Mm. But unless you've got good mental health, then you're not going to have that. You know, you it's always going to feel anxious. You know, one of the things that we're so scared of is joy. It's like something great is happening in your life. You're like, everything is good. My relationship is good. Mm. My life is, something is going to go wrong. We're so afraid of joy.
I'm guilty. I'm listening to you say that. Right? I'm just,
we're so afraid of joy. We have the sense of doom is coming. We just can't sit with it and just enjoy it. And just like, oh, this is an amazing moment. Let me live in this present. Mm. It's like, what bad thing is going to happen? Let me start fixing for the bad stuff that haven't even happened that I'm anticipating are going to happen. Mm. It's your mental space. What's informing that? You know, so a sense of self-awareness is also so important, because if you don't know what your triggers are, then you're going to get triggered by little things and you're going to think, oh, you know what? My life is not working out as well as I wanted to. Mm. But there's actually things you are avoiding. There's things that you haven't processed. But also at the same time, there's things that you feel like they are there and they actually don't exist.
Yeah.
It's not to say that people's lives don't get bad. We go through a lot in life.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's normal. But it's also just important to understand what's my mental space and what, and be self-aware so that you can actually understand, has something changed?
Yeah.
You know, that self-awareness is important. You know, like, I'm not a person who snaps at people. Why am I snapping at people suddenly? Something has changed.
Yeah.
Right? Self-awareness is really important in that mental health space.
Sure. I love that. I think going back to when you're saying that, sometimes you were making the example of sometimes when you find yourself snapping at people, but you're like, why is this happening? But if you are self-aware, you're like, okay, let me sit down, let me track back to what's really happening to us around us, because we also normalize that.
Yep.
Like, no, I'm just having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're actually not going deeper to really realize, I'm trying to understand, why is that happening? And I'm guilty. I think you were speaking about Joe. I'm like, I haven't had a moment of like, that's me. Sometimes I'm like, everything's just going wild. Something's going to go wrong.
Because,
I wouldn't say we self-destructive, but I think it's the whole thing of you're waiting for something to go wrong sometimes in your life, especially when you feel like things are going well. Or you feel like, I've been so blessed with my life. I've been so blessed with this and this. Therefore, something has to happen because everything has been going right here, and then it has to balance with something bad, which is so crazy. It's so messed up when you were talking. It's insane. I'm just like, how have I been operating with sort of that mindset of like, the good has to be balanced by something bad happening so that, you know, now I know that I've gotten my share of bad so I can enjoy the good.
Yeah. It's like a traumatic response, because it's like, if you've been hijacked, for example, and, you know, you were hijacked at a traffic light. The next time you're at a traffic light and someone approaches you, you're not thinking, are they handing me a pamphlet? You know, is this person just passing by? Are they about to beg for money or whatever? Mm. You're thinking, someone's about to hijack me, right? So your mind is already attuned to what wrong thing is going to happen now.
Mm.
So the minute you start seeing good things and you're like, oh, something bad needs to happen. But in your mind, you're hoping it's a bad enough thing that's not too bad.
Mm.
So it's not. So we have seen sudden things happen in our lives and we didn't expect them. And they absolutely, you know, torpedoed us. So we're thinking something bad needs to happen, but not too bad, just a little bit bad, to balance out all the good that's been happening in my life. Because, I mean, surely both of them need to exist in the same space. So that it's a traumatic response. We are so used to bad things happening that sometimes even when bad things aren't happening, we just want them. Just so that they give us a little bit of a sense of integration and balance, and we don't feel guilty for having so many good things happen at the same time.
I mean, I just had a moment of like, guys, I feel like I should be paying for this session.
I'll send you my bill.
Please. I feel like I just got something for myself right here. I think maybe just talking about trauma, because, you know, you were speaking about trauma. A lot of people go through trauma, whether it be personal trauma and career trauma. And I think one of the things, as I had said earlier on, you like, I didn't even know there was a term called career trauma. And we, a lot of like young professionals might experience because of corporate or workspaces and or personal trauma, even found out there's business trauma. How can one recognize that they've got trauma and begin the process of healing from trauma?
So I think the biggest thing about mental health just in general is that it's that self-awareness piece that I spoke about, that unless you're aware of yourself in a normal state, you're going to struggle to find yourself when something has perturbed your life, right? So trauma is a sense of threat to your well-being, right? So someone hijacks you, that's, you are threatening my life. You know, someone at work talks to you in a way that's demeaning, you're threatening my sense of self, my confidence. So unless you understand how you were before an incident or a gradual situation happens, you're going to struggle to find or to locate that there's a trauma in your life. And the thing about career trauma is that it's not an incident. Always. It's not mostly an incident. Sometimes there is an incident, you know, sexual harassment or whatever, all the things that we're expecting as trauma, right? But sometimes it's gradual. It's the way that your manager talks to you every day that chips away your confidence. It's the way that your colleagues don't regard you as, you know, as their equal. It's the way that you end up feeling about yourself in that particular environment. It's the imposter syndrome that you then sit with because you feel like you don't actually belong in the space, right? So the identifying of the trauma comes with you knowing yourself to say, I'm not a person that shouts. I'm not a person that struggles to get out of bed. I'm not a person that, you know, struggles to eat or eats a lot or is an emotional eater. Something is happening in my life. What is it? When did I start seeing it? And that's where, you know, therapy kind of helps, because we'll help you locate, okay, when did this start? You know, what was happening? Because sometimes we just on survival mode when we just keep moving, right? And we're actually not stopping and pausing and saying, what's happening to me? I'm not feeling like myself. You know, I'm not enjoying my work as I used to. Is it the work or is it the environment? So, you know, our workplaces absolutely traumatize us. We're just waiting for a big incident to call it trauma. We're not realizing that trauma is just threatening of your well-being. You know, if a person talks to you in a demeaning way, that's threatening the way that you're looking at yourself. Suddenly you're thinking, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I shouldn't be here. That's a traumatic experience. Exactly. You know, that's a traumatic experience, and people go through it all the time. So you have to understand, where is it shifting for me? And how have I changed as a person? Maybe you used to be a bubbly person, you used to like going out, and suddenly you're all by yourself. You're isolating, you're withdrawing. That means something is happening.
Salal knows that an increasing number of people are adopting holistic wellness lifestyle and seeking alternative solutions that go beyond what conventional pharmaceutical medicines can offer. Salal's range of mind and body nutraceuticals products range from products that can help you with a healthy mood balance, sleep stress, burnout, and anxiety. Salal's brand is widely prescribed by medical doctors and recommended by pharmacists. Remember to check out their websites, to check out their products. The link is available in the description box. I mean, I remember when I first joined an organization, I was there not as an intern, but a bag student. And one of the ladies that worked there was like, I think 2 years later, she's like, when I met you, you were this bubbly. She even said you had the shine. You had the shine, this glowing shine. When I saw you 2 years later, because she left, and then when I met her 2 years later after working at the organization, she's like, your light has just been, light had been dimmed. And I think for me, that was such a big wake up call of what the environment had also had already done to me. And even I think putting language to it and realizing that actually that was trauma. And I think we always wait for an incident, because every time when I speak on the podcast, I speak about one incident. But what I'm actually picking up now, that it was a gradual process of saying that trauma was not when I got into an accident, when I fell asleep, because I was tired. And that's always my, I talk about that story, but it has been a years, I mean, not even years, months and months of sort of that gradual process of being in that space. And I think maybe even moving to burnout now, one of the things that I've shared on the podcast a few times is that, you know, I was in an accident. It was not a hectic accident, but it was a small accident. And I'm glad it happened the way it did, because had I not going to that accident, it would have been a lot more worse than what it was. And it's because I fell asleep. I was just exhausted. Sure. I was not sleeping that week because of work. I was sleeping 1 hour, 2 hours.
That's insane.
A day.
Sure.
And didn't even see my husband for a whole week. But we were sharing a bed. I mean, I didn't speak to him because I would come when he's sleeping, leave when he was sleeping. And then I just fell asleep for like a second. Then I crashed into another person. And I know like a lot of young professionals or entrepreneurs or creatives, I know they also have crazy hours in the creative industry, are also burnt out. What are some of the ways someone can identify burnout and better deal with avoiding burnout? Because we know what to do. Like, I need to sleep more or something. But what are better ways to navigate around avoiding burnout?
So, I mean, I think we always recognize burnout as one of the aspects, right? Which is the physical, which is, you know, I am tired. I'm exhausted. And burnout is more than that. Burnout is, firstly, there's an emotional aspect to it, which is being detached, demotivated from activities that you used to love doing, right? There's a sense of, I absolutely love going out with my friends. I just can't do that now. Every moment I get, I want to sleep, right? Because you're thinking, I'm working a lot and therefore I need to sleep just to recover from that. Yes, there's that element, and that's an important element, that when there's work overload, you will experience burnout. But the important aspect as well is that emotional bit. You know, you're feeling demotivated, you're feeling detached. And then there's the bit of, you know, you can't get out of bed anymore, right? That's a behavioral. So burnout is behavioral, emotional, and physical, right? It's not just the exhaustion, which means when you combat it, you don't just sleep, right? Sleeping is... sleeping is just one aspect of it. The other aspect is finding out how did you get there, right? And most of the times it's either because, yes, there's the work overload, but why are you not drawing those boundaries at work? And I found that there are two just main things that people, that will drive people to a burnt out state in an emotional space. Firstly, you want to prove yourself, right? That you can do it, that you're capable of doing the work. However, there isn't a measuring scale for yourself to say, when I have done it like this, when I have reached this threshold, then I would have done enough for me to stop for the day. So then you keep going, right? You keep going because there's just so much work. There's a lot to do. And you just, and that leads to the workload that we're talking about. The other sense of it is that your sense of value and your sense of esteem is attached to your completion of that task. So unless I finish this project in this time, you know, accordingly, and there's no issues, then I'm not doing enough. Then I'm not good enough. Then I'm not supposed to be in this position, right? That imposter syndrome comes again. And imposter syndrome and burnout are like friends, right? Right?
I would have never even put those two together, you know?
Absolute friends, because the way you're feeling about yourself in your organization and the work that you do, you're doing will inform how much work you're doing and what boundaries are you willing to set. So if you're at a space where you're like, I'm not seeing my husband, I'm not, you know, and seeing friends, I'm not being present in my own life, you can see there's a lot of boundaries that have been violated there, right? And that's when you draw back and you say, okay, what is a useful way of me having completed this task? What do I need to do? What are my minimum requirements? How do I then send this to my manager or my boss to say, this is the structure of how I want to do this project. Yeah. This is how I'm going to meet it. This is what's feasible.
Yeah.
Because actually I can't do 18 hour days anymore, right? It's boundaries. It is scary. It is scary to put those boundaries.
Yeah,
and burnout most is about boundaries. It's about understanding yourself, and it's about putting a healthy self-esteem to you. But putting those boundaries says you believe that you will tell your manager off, or and they will still respect that because they respect your work that much.
Mm. But how do you best communicate boundaries? I think even from in the workspace and or just in life, it's not easy, especially when you're having, there's this expectation for you to show up a certain way, right? And sometimes at your detriment, because now you might be finding yourself, I'm very guilty of this, where you just show up for five people in one day. There's that expectation. And then you find yourself where you like, okay, I've been taking this person's emotional sort of problems and this person, but then it's very hard to set your boundaries because you want to love on them, you know, you want to love on your family, your friends, you want to be there, you want to be that person, but it's also hard to set those boundaries. How can you best communicate boundaries within your different spaces?
I think you have to reconcile it with yourself first, right? That setting boundaries isn't just saying no for the sake of saying no. Setting boundaries is self-preservation. It's learning how to love yourself, but also how for people to love you, right? It's a template. And I always say this, that if you're a person that loves expensive perfume, and people around you know that, they're not going to dare buy you a birthday gift of cheap perfume, right? They'll buy you something else if they can't afford what you do for yourself. But it is, how are you relating with yourself first that then helps people understand the parameters into which they can actually, you know, play around you, right? So I, like I said, I'm a serious person. Generally, I am. But there's people who know they just can't, like, you know, say it, like, just be loud, you know, because that's not how I am. That's not how I kind of relate with people. But there's people like my family and my friends that don't care.
Yeah.
Right? Because that will just do that because they know that's a space that has been cultivated and that I'm comfortable at. I mean, I'll just ignore them and all of that if I can't match their energy because I'm not going to stress myself. But the point about it is that the way that you relate with yourself sets quite a lot of the boundaries of how people relate with you. That's just point number one.
Yeah.
Right?
That's good.
Right?
Sure, that's so good.
And the other aspect of boundaries is that when you then understand that you're not saying no for the sake of saying no, then you can learn, how can I still be there for you and be present for you, but also in a way that's healthy, right? So if then a person is asking for money all the time, then you say, listen, I understand you're in a financial difficulty. This is how much I'm willing to send to you every month, but I can't do beyond that because I have to look at my budget too and understand how can I best suit my needs, right? So boundaries is not just saying no. It's about understanding, what do I have? What is my capacity? And what can I give you without being resentful at the end?
Sure.
Because how many people play black takes and are so resentful of their families?
Yes. The resentful element is so important when you say that, because like the lack of creating boundaries can also lead to resentment.
Absolutely.
You know, and we think we're just showing up and it's like, no, it's just a symptom of me having to show up. This is how I feel. But it might be resentment.
It is. You're building that, right? Because it's like, now you're seeing a phone call from your family, like, I'm going to ignore that, right? You're not building relationships. You're not saying, listen, family, this is what's happening in my life. I have, you know, especially people with family, like back homes and all of that stuff. Like, this is how much Joburg costs.
Yeah.
You know, this is what rent looks like because they think you have money. That's their perspective. And sometimes we want to rescue people so much that we don't draw those boundaries.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, but if, you know, what's the point of me working if I can't do this for my family? Well, how about subsistence and life and all of that stuff? That's the point of you working. You have to build up the way you support people.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be at the detriment of your own mental health, your own self-care. It's the same thing in the working environment. You know, your manager may think, oh no, you're not doing enough, or they may think that just because you keep saying yes, you still have capacity. Unless you draw that boundary and say, listen, these are my tasks for the day. These are my tasks for the week. I don't know if I'll be able to get to this one,
yeah.
Right? You're communicating without being disrespectful that this is what's on my plate. This is, and sometimes I say to people, like, just draw a plan for your manager and say, yeah, this is how long it takes me to do this project and this project and this, or what I'm estimating. I don't, you know, think that I'll be able to get to this one. You're giving them some level of evidence so that they know you're not just saying for no for the sake of saying, yeah, no. You're saying, I might get to it, but I may not, depending on how this situation goes. Or you ask them, these are the things that I have on my plate. What would you like me to prioritize?
Yes, that's an important one.
Right?
Yeah.
Because then they give you that and they can't come back to you and saying, why didn't you finish all five things? You're like, but this is what I'm able to. And communication is also key in this, in the workspace. At the end of the day, you know, they gave you five things. You only did three. You communicate, you're saying, you know, this is what I've been able to do for the day. I will resume this tomorrow. Then they don't feel frustrated that you're not working, but also you're not feeling like you need to work to make sure that you are proving that you're doing something in the organization. It's just all about balance and, yeah, communication, integration. But most of all, you don't have to prove yourself in a way that actually kills you in the process.
Sure. And I think there's that notion, like, we've spoken about this because I've had a few professionals come through the podcast, and some of them left corporate because of different reasons. But this whole thing that you need to work, that drop, is it work till you drop?
Yeah.
And clarifying, sort of being in hospital for working long hours,
yeah,
you know?
No.
And I think it's that whole thing of, because we're not setting boundaries and we're also doing it at the expense of making sure, obviously, that your manager's happy, they're happy with your work. And what it really does, it causes your mental health. And I mean, I cannot even, when I can count my friends that are not struggling with mental health, that are working in organizations or even in running their own businesses. And I can't even think of more than five that are not struggling. And I have a lot of friends. And just to see how I think the space, I think we haven't even been given that space to create boundaries, or it'd be okay for us to create boundaries.
Yes.
I feel like we've just always been taught to say, you need to be that person that,
yes,
shows up.
Yeah.
And communicating your boundaries is not something you're taught, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that, it's not, it almost feels not unnatural to say that, okay, friend, this is how I set my boundaries, even,
yes,
though I'm still your friend, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of, we're not taught that.
Yeah.
And I think that has to change. I wanted to go into a wellness tank, you know, building a wellness tank in your corner. How can someone build a wellness tank, and why is it important to have a wellness tank? And I don't know if I just coined a wellness tank, maybe to say, for anyone that's out there, but a place where you can go for your sort of your wellness, you know, how can one build that, and why is it important to have one?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, it will go back to my to my other point again. You have to know what you need, right? I think that's a basic thing. There's people who are not fazed by, I don't know, things changing, right? Change, whatever. So, and then there's people who are really fazed by that. You need to understand yourself. What are the things that really get to you? What are the things that, I can get through this quite, you know, quite easily. So, the idea of building a wellness tank or building resources for yourself is that you have to know that you've got the resources when you need them, right? We don't build in the moment when we shattered. We don't build in the moment of chaos.
Yeah.
You build prior. And that's a thing about self-care that people don't understand. You don't try go to a spa when you are literally absolutely burnt out. It's not working in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's not doing anything, right?
Yeah.
You build the culture of taking care of yourself way before the moment where you crash, so that even if it happens that you do crash, you've got the resources to say, oh, you know what? When I'm feeling anxious, I generally, you know, go for a walk, or I go for a jog, or I do this. That takes a process, right? If you're only trying to intervene at the moment of, you know, there's a lot happening, you're going to struggle. It's going to feel pointless. What's the point of this? Why am I going to the spot? You know, it just feels like you're scrambling at stuff. So know yourself enough, but also build the culture of taking care of yourself. And self-care is more than just physical self-care.
Yeah.
It's more than the bath, you know, the
facials,
the solo lunches.
Yeah.
It's also emotional self-care.
Sure.
Emotional self-care are those, the boundaries we talking about. It's the feeding yourself. What do I like? You know, what makes me happy? Oh, we don't like answering this question. And when you ask a person, what do you like? What makes you happy? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, what makes you happy? What's that place where you're like, I can go here and I know I'm going to feel absolutely settled. I'm going to feel fulfilled. You know, what are the things that add to you, right? It might be relationships. It might be conversations. It might be a jog. And sometimes it might be different things at different points of your life. Do those things. Have a culture of just taking care of yourself and let it be planned, right? We plan our self-care, right? Yeah. You must plan this. Oh, I go to a spa once a month, or I take a walk with a friend, you know, every week. I have a conversation that fulfills me and that makes me feel absolutely grateful about where I am. You know, I go to church. You plan these things depending on yourself and what actually gives you meaning. And if you do that, you're building that tank and it's filling up and you can have capacity to give without feeling like, what are you doing here? Like, why? Right? You're building something for yourself. You're building this place where you are absolutely in love with yourself and you're taking care of yourself. And that's the thing that we also miss sometimes, is that the more work you do on yourself, the more you love yourself. Have you seen people who go to the gym and who eat healthy and how much they love themselves? It's like they've got this thing that they think, I have invested so much in myself, like, I'm not going to let you do this to me. Like, there's a sense of boundaries that they you know, they put in place. The discipline, the work ethic. It's like, I love myself enough to work so hard on myself, right? That's building the wellness tank. Because what we sometimes miss as well is that we don't go to the gym and lose weight because we hate ourselves. You do it because you love yourself. You love yourself enough to want something healthy for you. And every time you do that because of, out of hate or loathing of your body or whatever, you're not going to succeed. Like, it's always going to be that constant, oh, what's the point? I'm not losing enough anyway. And then you kind of stop. And then that inconsistency, right?
Yeah.
But when you do it out of love and saying, I want to do this for myself, you are kind. If that scale says, you know, plus 2 kgs, you're like, yes, you're demotivated. Yes, it hits you. But you're still kind to yourself and you say, all right, let's keep pushing. I mean, in 3 months, I'm going to be grateful for this. And if I stop now, I'm still going to be at the same place or even a worse place than I am if I just keep going. So it's just that it's the culture of talking to yourself. It's just the culture of how to build a relationship with yourself.
Yeah, culture of talking to yourself. I love
it's so important.
It's so important, hey. And I think that's something that I'm also adopting now. And something that I wanted to ask you about is, how important is it to celebrate yourself, you know? And I think that's something that so often when you are working and busy and just you get lost in life, you forget to celebrate yourself. And I think sometimes I may be wrong, forgetting to celebrate yourself. Sometimes you wait for people to validate your achievements.
Definitely.
And if they're not validating, you feel like, oh, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing enough. Am I good enough? And this is something that I'm really trying to be intentional about, because I'm also very critical of myself to say, how do I celebrate myself and be kind to myself?
Yeah.
What would you say? How can one begin to celebrate themselves, and why is it important to celebrate yourself?
This is literally my ministry, hey? Like, I absolutely love this conversation because I think we do so much. Like, we do so much and we don't recognize ourselves. And one of the things that I always ask people is that, what are you expecting from other people to recognize that you're doing that you're not recognizing in yourself? Right? You know, we're doing so much. You're like, oh, you know, I did this and I passed and nobody said well done. I'm like, but did you say well done to yourself?
Sure.
Did you like start there? Did you start there? Because celebrating yourself gives you the audacity, firstly, to be confident in yourself and know that this is what I can do. But it also just says to you, you can do so much more. Unless you track your progress and unless you track the milestones that you've actually achieved, you don't think you're doing anything. You don't think you're doing enough. You don't think you're good enough. It's like, because the thing about us is that we've got a growth mindset. which means we're always growing, right? Mm. We always want more, right? You get a car and next thing you're already thinking about the bigger one. You get a house and you're already thinking about more. Mm. You get an award, you're already thinking about the next one. You don't celebrate that moment because you're looking at the next thing. So celebrating yourself helps you understand that you are doing the things that you've always wanted to do, that you are literally in the part of your life. I mean, I wake myself up, I'm like, wow. These are the things I ran away from, right? Sure. This is a part of my life that I thought, oh, I'll never get there, right? Yeah. You know, I'm probably just going to work somewhere, you know, like in a supermarket. And then there's nothing wrong with that. But there's a part in my life where I thought there's no future here. Mm. And then I dreamed about the psychologist thing that I didn't even know how to spell.
I'm a counselor.
I was like, listen, give me counselor. I know that. I know how to say it. I know how to spell it. Yeah. And now I'm like, whoa, I'm actually in this. And if I miss that, I miss the little girl's dreams.
Yeah.
And if you miss the little girl's dreams, you actually miss the amount of work and progress that you've done. So the audacity that comes with celebrating yourself is amazing.
Sure. I love that. The audacity of celebrating yourself is amazing.
Absolutely.
I love, love. And I think it allows you to be present.
Yes.
It allows you to not always focus on the destination, because when you focus on destination, you miss out on what's happening right now.
Yep.
And you miss out on the amazing things that you had dreamt of, as you said, because you're trying to now get to the next level, but you haven't been, you're not allowing yourself to be present. Yeah. You're not allowing yourself to say, this is what I've achieved in this moment.
Yep.
This is what I'm proud of. This is what I want to celebrate, you know, and those small wins are so important. And I think that's something that even from this conversation and just taking back to being intentional about celebrating myself and saying, a few years back, I hoped and wanted a certain life.
Yes.
And that's where I am right now. And let me allow myself to be present and celebrate that.
Yeah.
Sure. And sure. I think just even saying how to be kind to yourself, why is it important? Because this is something I saw on Twitter a while back, and they said, if you could forgive yourself for one thing, what would you forgive yourself for? Mm-hmm. Or ask for forgiveness from yourself. And I said to him, for me, I would say that definitely being too hard on myself.
Mm.
You know, that's something like, I'm so sorry for being hard on you, Ayanda.
Yeah.
And I wish I could be kinder to myself, because if I'm not kind to myself, it's hard to be, not even like, maybe this is also funny enough. It's not hard for me to be kind to everyone else, but it's hard for me to be kind to myself.
Yeah.
Why is it important for you to be kind to themselves, and how are some of the ways they can actually be kind to themselves, especially when you're in different spaces, maybe in corporate and business, and you're constantly told that, you know, you're not receiving kindness around. So you then the default for yourself is not to be kind to yourself. Yeah. And say you are horrible. You suck at this. You're not good at this, because that's what you're getting from whether your manager or business. You're trying to get funding, and everyone out there saying your business idea sucks, and you're sitting there, you're like, yeah, it actually really does suck.
Sure.
So what are some of those ways, and why is it important to be kind to yourself?
So, you know, being kind to yourself is like, I feel like that's the most important thing, because unless you see yourself, because that's what being kind to yourself is, you need to see yourself, you need to recognize yourself.
You need to see yourself. I think that for me is a pause moment. Yeah. To start saying,
You must see yourself. Yeah. You must recognize yourself. You must hear yourself, because we say so much, right? Mm. Oh, I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. But we just don't see it. Like, it goes back to what you were saying. If you don't celebrate yourself, you look for external validation. But when you're kind to yourself, you're saying, okay, what do I need? What am I doing? You know, where am I going? And you understand the expectations, because that is the biggest thing we do. We have these ginormous expectations. And you know what? And then we meet them, right? Right? We meet them and we just don't recognize it.
Sure.
We're just like, oh, no, but like, I made it because, you know, Ayanda gave me a contact for that other person. And you disregard the entire work that you've done to get to that space. You're not being kind to yourself. We think we are motivating ourselves when we're being hard on ourselves, but we don't, right? Sure. And actually, studies have shown that when we criticize ourselves, we activate the part of our bodies that feels threatened. Like, you know, someone's coming at you with a knife. We trigger that, which is our flight, freeze, fawn, and flight responses, because now in this moment you're saying, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm not great. You're threatening yourself and you're threatening your well-being and you're chipping yourself away and your confidence.
So good.
Right? Yeah. So we have to be conscious to ourselves. We have no choice.
Yeah.
Right? Because when a person, like you're saying, comes to you and says, but you're not good enough or you're not pretty, you need to be like, yeah, but I know. Like, but I know I'm good enough. I yeah. know I'm pretty. I know I can do this. And it comes from that audacity of recognizing your milestones as you achieve them. Mm. Because unless you've got the evidence and the proof, you miss it, right? I say this sometimes because, I mean, I love running. And I say if you always see runners, you always see them with a watch or a phone or something that helps them track. Because the first run you ever do, let's say, for example, you do a 30 minutes run or 35-kilometer run, right? And you do that in like an hour. You at the end of it, what are you feeling? You're huffing and puffing and you are panting for air.
Yeah.
Right? That's how you feel. Yeah. It feels horrible. Then you do the next run, maybe let's say a week later, and you know, you do it for 45. It's 45 minutes now, cut down the 15 minutes. At the end of it, how are you feeling? You're huffing and puffing and you're panting for air. Mm. 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, you do the same run, but now under 30 minutes. How do you feel at the end? You are huffing and puffing and you're panting for air. Mm. The feeling at the end is the same. You're tired.
Sure.
But what you miss unless you track yourself is the progress that you went from 1 hour to under 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Unless you track that progress, you miss it.
Mm.
You miss the progress. You miss the ways in which you've actually achieved along the way. And actually, you're like thinking, oh, at the end of the run, I'm always tired.
Mm.
That means I'm not good enough. I'm not doing this thing. But had you been tracking your progress along the way, you'll see your pace has improved.
Yes.
You'll see your time has reduced.
Yeah.
So that's the thing about being kind to ourselves and actually seeing ourselves and tracking ourselves. It comes with the recognition of what do we keep doing and how well have we been doing it over the past couple of years, couple of weeks? What's the process? Because if we miss that, then we miss our progress.
Sure. I love that. I love that analogy. I love, because I also run. I also run. So I think when you're explaining that, because tracking for me, it's always like, okay, let me see how far I've run. So, okay, now it's 35. Now it's 30. I'm getting there.
Mm.
Oh my goodness. I am at 33. I went from 35 to 33. I'm almost there.
Exactly.
You know, and I think it just shows the importance of tracking that your progress and your
Absolutely.
Journey and being kind to yourself in that regard.
Yeah.
Just in closing, what, I wouldn't even say three, maybe three, let's say three. What would you say to someone that's at home right now? They want to take a different sort of turn with their lives and trying to incorporate more wellness into their routine or being more aware of their mental health or maybe they feel like they're struggling. What are the three things you would say that they should get started on? And if they're in a space where maybe I don't really can't afford to put myself in a space where I can see a psychologist, or maybe I am actually fine, but I just want to be better as a person.
Yeah.
Do I wake up at 5, like Raman Sharma says, to be part of a 5 a.m. club? But what are the three things? And I know it's not like easy to put three, because there's a lot more.
Yeah.
What are the top three you would say?
Sure, that is a difficult one to kind of phrase. But I want to say something even before the three things of you recognizing that, of you already being in a funk or in a bad space, that I think it's so important that we recognize ourselves as we're going down the dark hole. Because unless we recognize ourselves going in that dark space, it is so hard. I cannot tell you how hard it is for people to get out of a depressive state.
Mm.
It is not easy. It is not a snap out of it, out of a burnt out state, out of an anxious space. When you go down, it is absolutely difficult. So it's so important for people to just understand themselves enough to say, I am not okay, what's going on? And get intervention before it gets to the space where you just feel like debilitated, you can't actually do anything. But I would say if you're already feeling in that space, the first thing to understand is how did you get there, right? And sometimes we don't know how to kind of track for ourselves how to get there, but we have to understand, especially if you feel like you don't have the resources to go to therapy, you have to do a little bit of self-analysis to say, how did I get here? Because you need to identify what is making me stay here. Is it work? you know, is that where my, you know, trigger point is? Is it home? Is it my relationship? Is it my family? Because unless you identify what's causing you pain, yeah, you're going to consistently have the pain. Mm. You know, if you don't remove the thorn on your foot, you just keep stepping on the same thing, it's going to get worse, right? Mm. So I try to identify for yourself, where is this coming from? Or what is the trigger point for this? The next thing I like saying to people is that you have to help your mind process, right? Mm. And you do that by either recording, you know, journaling or things like that. And we say this all the time, and I think people are so used to, oh, you must just journal. Journal is not about just write down your feelings and all of that. Journal is about you being aware of the state of mind you're in so that you can understand what's happening. Because that's the question we generally ask. And that's what psychologists are trying to figure out. What is happening?
Yeah.
And that insight of knowledge into what's happening is actually so important, right? It's what helps you say, oh, but this is what I can do about it. Oh, let me find a different perspective to this. And I would also say, I think just as a third thing is get support. Yeah. We are not islands. As much as we're strong people, independent people who can do things on our own, just get support. A friend, a family member, someone you trust. And I say this all the time, that you have to learn to be vulnerable to people. And like, people are like, oh no, but you know, people can't trust people these days, yeah, and all of that. And I always say, you must test people with the information you give them. Don't give them the whole story,
yeah,
right? Give them enough for you to understand, how are they respecting what I've just said to them? Mm. You know, are you respecting my life, the boundaries that I've given to you? And have I heard it now back from someone else? Mm. And when a person consistently is proving to you that, you know, I'm here for you, I hear you, I understand you, then you give that person more information and you've built a relationship with them of sharing, yeah, right? But you can't do it on your own,
yeah,
because our minds lie to us all the time.
Yeah.
Right? You're like thinking, I am so pathetic. I am so horrible. Sure. I am this and I am that. And you expand situations that don't actually need to be expanded to that level, because in your mind, you're just going in the rabbit hole. Mm. On and on. But when you talk to someone and they're like, but what are you talking about? You remember you did this and you did this and you did this, and you're like, oh, you're right. So you have to have support. We can't get away from that. It is important. As vulnerable and uncomfortable as it is actually important to just have people in your corner that you can have these conversations with and you can be honest with.
Yeah. Sure. I love that, getting support, because we cannot do it alone. And I think sometimes, yep, we get into a habit of, I don't know if you just feel, I think there's shame in some of the things you might be thinking, and sharing, mm-hmm, them, you worry that that person will perceive you differently. And I, yeah, think that goes back to the testing, also the right people in your space.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for your insight, your wisdom, and your just sharing. I think I sat here thinking, wow, I hope anyone that's like listening, driving, going to work right now, thinking, oh my goodness, that is me right now. And they're able to then identify those points. I don't want to say issues or whatever, but they can identify that and say, actually, I do need help.
Yeah.
I just thought it was just life. This is how, yeah, life is. You start working. This is what you go through.
Yeah.
And you get over it. But I really do hope that it will spark that for them. And for anyone that's sitting there and saying, shucks, how can I get hold of you? What is the process? How can people get hold of you if they want to maybe book a session or maybe be introduced to your wellness hub? You did speak about it and, mm-hmm, what the different offerings you have, but, yeah, what is the quickest and easiest way people can get hold of you?
All right. I think before I even get to that, just to your last point, I think it's also just so important for people to understand that they can get better, right? I think when we are in very bad situations, is we forget that things can get better. We like think, oh, this is over, my life will always be like this. It's not. Like, there are people who have been in really terrible depressive spaces and actually have gotten better. So you can get better, different methods and different ways. But yeah, so if they want to get a hold of, you know, me, you know, Oasis Therapy is the easiest way. You know, go onto the website, you'll find all of our contact details. I am on Instagram as Luanelehasu_psychologist. And we also have Oasis Therapy page on Instagram as well. So yeah, but even if you just Google Oasis Therapy, you'll find us.
And guys, we will be sharing all the links from the beginning, or this, you guys are listening to this at the end, but we will be sharing all the links, everything that you might need if you want to reach out to her and get some information. And if you are feeling like, oh my goodness, there were so many moments where I was like, I can identify. And I think what we really want to create, this is not the end. This is just planting seeds for you to start getting the help that you might need, or to start those conversations with yourself or with a professional within your space. So thank you so much for and I hope everyone else was equipped and elevated by today's episode. I hope you were equipped and elevated by today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you loved what you heard, please share with others and post about on social media. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram, Ayanda_Vanna, and on Twitter, Ayanda Vanna. See you in the next episode.